TFB's Behind the Gun podcast is sponsored by Arms Corps. As the world's largest manufacturer of 1911s, Arms Corps and Rock Island Armory know a thing or two about firearms and ammunition. Affordable, reliable, dependable. Get yours. Visit armscorps.com. We're also brought to you by Silencer Shop. How do you buy a silencer? That's easy. Just go to silencershop.com. With hundreds of kiosks at select dealers across the nation, Silencer Shop streamlines your silencer purchasing experience. You shop and let Silencer Shop handle the rest. Visit silencershop.com to get started today.
TFB's Behind the Gun podcast is sponsored by Kimber. Kimber Rapide 1911s. Three highly customized handguns. The Rapide Dawn, and the Rapide Scorpius. Each with a personality all its own and performance to match. Find yours at KimberAmerica.com.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the TFB B-Side Podcast. I'm your host, Luke C., and today I have Preston from Quiet Boar with me. Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty well, man. And for those of you who don't know out there, Quiet Boar is a company that specializes in working with suppressors. And so, Preston, why don't you kind of tell us your company's origin story and then where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. So Quiet Boar is actually kind of a sister company underneath Creative Arms. Creative Arms is really our firearms and our suppressor manufacturing company. So Quiet Boar kind of started in, I would say, probably 2019, 2020, right in there, with specifically dealing with products in regards to Form 1. So for those that didn't know what a Form 1 is, it's an application to make your own firearm. So traditionally, for the consumer, a Form 1 is usually used for SBRs or sharp barrel shotguns to basically register a 16-inch rifle that you're going to convert down into a 12 or whatever shorter barrel length you use the Form 1. A lot of people didn't know that you could use the Form 1 to make your own suppressor. So that was kind of an area that we really tried to take advantage of being able to build products that people could purchase and then do an ATF Form 1, get approved, and then make their own suppressor out of it. So in the last couple of years, we really kind of focused in on that market. And then as ATF changes kind of happened, we've kind of backed down from that market, but brought those Quiet Boar products into our Creative Arms product line as basically a budget suppressor line. So yeah, that's kind of where the basis of Quiet Boar started, but we can kind of dive into all the different options that we have.
Yeah. So I actually pretty familiar with your product lineup before, back when you guys still had the Form 1 stuff, because I actually purchased one of your 22 caliber, I guess is it the titanium one that you guys had?
Yeah.
Super easy to complete the process. I mean, like, it's not I feel like a lot of people's hesitance around the Form 1 process was that, it would be like too complicated. Like the paperwork would be too complicated or it'd be too difficult to, you know, line everything up to get it laser engraved and all that. But speaking from experience, it's incredibly easy, especially if you live anywhere near a large metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really easy to go get your fingerprints done. It's really easy to go have it laser engraved. And then, you know, it was like I think at the time a Form 1 e-form was like a 2-week wait time, if that.
Yeah, it was somewhere between, I would say, 15 to 30 days. I mean, we require customers to send in their submitted or approved Form 1, yep. Basically to prove that they were doing the right thing and that they were in a legal state. But with that, I was able to kind of put together like processing time and see really how fast the ATF was going. I mean, I had some that would get approved in like 2 days and then some in 60 days. So, but that kind of average was 20 to 30 days, which is significantly faster than what they were doing for the Form 4s.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was always kind of puzzling to me just because, you know, it's like, really, what's the difference? I mean, it's all going on, yeah, on a list of some sort, but I guess it's easier to process a Form 1 than a Form 4.
Yeah, I think there's probably, like, I'm speculating. I think the Form 4, just with transferring the suppressor from a company to an individual, they take a little bit more time in that processing and just doing the FBI background check. Again, I'm speculating because the Form 1 is the exact same background check. So I'm not sure if it was something on the backside or what the deal was.
Now, since you guys are doing the Form 4 stuff, what have your experiences been with as far as like the ATF wait times for, you know, for NFA transfers? Like, do you feel like the times are going down with the implementation of the e-form system?
Yes and no. I think so the e-form system, for those that don't know, got reestablished for the Form 4s in what, I think January of this year, December, January.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
So with that, we're now able to do the Form 4s electronically. So traditionally, we did them via paper, had to mail everything in, mail fingerprints physically in to the ATF. So with the e-form system, in our case, we have our own digital fingerprint scanner. So we actually scan everything in and do everything digitally, so we don't have to mail anything off, which is really nice. But as far as wait times, like me personally, I've submitted probably 40 forms starting in January, and I've gotten a few back from February now, so we're at like 180-ish days. So the ATF is trying, their goal from that I've seen kind of posted was trying to get down to a 90-day turnaround time. But again, it's kind of the ATF, and they say one thing and they do another. So I don't know.
Yeah. And kind of going in with that, kind of let's talk about the, what I think anyone out there who's done a Form 1 build before would probably be screaming about right now. Like, what did the ATF change?
So it was about February of this last year. Basically, so for those that didn't know, there were still quite a few people in the industry up until December to February. But in February, they basically stopped all the Form 1s and mass denied probably about 800 people all at once. And so with that, they basically changed how the process was going to be done on doing Form 1. So prior to this, you really didn't have to supply any supplemental documents or anything like that. After this change, they basically went through and were asking consumers to provide proof of how they were going to manufacture their firearm or their...
Yeah, like pictures of raw materials and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I think that a lot of the times, like our customers are just general hobbyists. Like a tool room lathe or a Bridgeport, and are capable of making their own suppressor. I mean, when you get down to the basics of what a suppressor is, it's pretty straightforward to make.
Yeah, not that complicated.
Yeah, and I think that the Form 1 market was cool because you really got to bring this community of hobbyists together that were also firearms enthusiasts. And it was just unfortunate to see that whole market kind of just disappeared, and the ATF kind of started to go after some of these like manufacturers of internals and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was one of those people. Cause like once I learned that it was possible, I'm like, oh, I could make my own suppressor. I was like, why don't I just do that? That sounds like fun.
And so. Yeah. And like the cool thing with the whole Form 1 industry is it gave, like, as a company, it was really cool for us because, like traditionally we were, as far as feedback and stuff like that, it was really difficult to get that feedback, or unless you're spending $30,000-$40,000 on test equipment just to get that data. So with the Form 1 market, we were basically getting to have data from everyone, as they were trying different things or making their own internal cup designs and stuff like that. So, I mean, in the Form 4 industry now, you have a couple companies that are already having fantastic success, but their heritage really came from the Form 1 industry, which is exciting to see.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I mean, honestly, I 100% agree with you there, because, you know, more NFA ownership, the more it's normalized, the less, the easier it's going to get, because it's either going to put more pressure on the government to either bolster the, you know, the amount of people they have on hand to deal with all these applications, or hopefully, you know, this is me being wishful, you know, we can get suppressors deregulated.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would be hard pressed to see if them ever deregulate it, because it's a tax,
it's kind of a for them. Well, it's also kind of like a one way street as far as, you know,
yeah,
when it comes to gun legislation.
I would absolutely love it. I mean, well, and that's the thing too, is there's always this like naiveness from non-gun enthusiasts, which is really frustrating. I mean, to talk about suppressors, they think it's this like unobtainium quiet, and it's just like, man, all it is a muffler. Like, you guys are required by law to have a muffler in the car. Like, I mean, we're into car stuff, and I've got a couple race cars and stuff, and they're fucking loud, and it's like,
Cut your exhaust off and see how quiet your four cylinder is.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't like it when the kid with the freaking Honda Civic cuts off his muffler and run around the neighborhood. So put a muffler on it.
Yeah. It's kind of an attitude that I've noticed that Europeans are almost diametrically opposed to us in that regard. Like, their politicians and their citizens seem to understand that suppressors aren't like murder weapons. They're convenience items. They're like, oh, wow, I didn't like lose my hearing for, you know, shooting one round of, six five Creedmoor or something like that this year, you know, I had a suppressor on my gun. So it's like, they, to them, it almost seems like it's a practical thing. And I think we're seeing the tide kind of turn. I think in Austria recently, suppressors were deregulated, and also in Sweden, like, they got theirs taken off of their registry as well, which is cool. I just, you know, it's hard to get the American market moving that way, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it stems kind of from our history too. I think between, you have like the Wild Wild West all the way up until like the 30s and 40s, that I think has a really bad taste for the government as far as gun control and everything. And comparatively to some of these other countries that have had wars and all this stuff go on before, they're kind of just like, okay, we understand that we want to have something that's useful for and convenient for other people, not necessarily just the single person.
Yeah. And yeah, that's, you're probably right. That does seem like a logical way to go about it, versus, like, you know, our gun market is heavily saturated in the more of like, how are you going to arm the individual? I think, I mean, honestly, like, if I'm putting it that way, that's basically what the Second Amendment is intended for in the United States. Just arm the individual. Cool. Yeah, so why don't you walk us through what you have available now, as far as your Form 4 suppressors?
Yeah. So Creative Arms, we both have firearms. So we manufacture AR-15 and AR-10 platforms and some boutique AK-47 stuff and 74s. But as far as our suppressor line, we have two different series. So we have our QB series, which was basically our quiet bore product line, revamped into a Form 4 suppressor. So it's basically the same thing, but completely finished out. So for those that have already been in the Form 1 industry, they're already clipped, they're already bored to whatever size that you want. So we have our 22 that's available in aluminum or titanium. So really the main differences between those two is just the internals. For that, the titanium is really nice for higher pressure stuff, for like 17 HMR and 5.7. So if you shoot aluminum internals, after about 500-600 rounds, those internals want to collapse on each other. So basically you get the internals hot and they get annealed, and so the aluminum gets soft and it wants to crush. So that's really what the main purpose of the titanium in that specific 22 kit was for. Then we have 945, pretty straightforward. So we have our own booster housings and Nielsen device. So we use the AEC style piston. So that basically covers all your different handguns. If you wanted to run on like a tri-lug, like an MP5, we have adapters for that as well. And then we have basically our K series and our L series 30 and 5.56 suppressors. So basically your 6.5 inch is your K series, and then your 9.25 inch is the L series. So we have
the L series. Okay.
Yep. So we basically have those available in 5.56, 30 cal, and then on the L we have 350 Legend for kind of our local guys.
Now, do you have like barrel length restrictions and all that with your suppressors that people should know about if they're like looking at them?
Yeah, the K series is kind of minimized. I wouldn't recommend going under 8.5 inches. So we've tested them on our own M16s with 12.5 inch barrels, and they seem to hold up to easily like 120 round straight through. I mean, that's like 4 mags, so or 4 or 5 mags straight through.
So we're talking full auto or just as fast as you can pull the trigger?
Full auto.
Okay, wow. Okay, that's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like doing it.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, like, if you're looking at it in the purview of like you're paying what? It's like $400 for one of these suppressors. And then, you know, if you're out the door for $600, I'm not going to complain about that. Because, like, first of all, the ammo alone right now is way more expensive.
Yeah, I mean,
so I wouldn't be caught ever mag dumping 4 mags in a row.
Especially if you're like 300 blackout or something.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you're talking like $1 a round right now.
Yeah, and like I was just out doing some suppressor testing last week, and we shot probably 800 rounds of a variety of both subsonic and supersonic. I'm like, oh, a lot of investment on just testing, but
it's take out a home equity loan on that stuff.
Yeah, no kidding. but yeah, so going back to kind of the product line, so that was kind of the QB series. As far as our creative arms, we have a new 22, which is called the Little Guy. So we really kind of, using the quad bore market, the Form 1 industry, we really went back and are starting to go through our product line and redevelop them and revamp them into what I consider more premium products. So the quad bore series is what I'm going to consider like our budget series.
Okay. And
creative arm stuff is going to be kind of our premier, higher end kind of high performance market. So
gotcha.
The Little Guy is kind of the first product line in that new series. So it's all titanium suppressor, so it's good all the way up to 5.7, but has really, really good sound suppression on handgun pistols for 22. So okay. I'm really excited. I'm working on basically taking this data that I got last week and kind of making some blog posts, so you can check those out on our website. But
yeah, absolutely. I'll drop a link to that stuff in the show notes below.
For sure. So we're working right now on our new 30 cal and 5.56 stuff. And then after that, we're probably going to look at trying to do like 8.6. We have a bolt gun that we're building right now, which I'm pretty excited for. So it's a short barrel bolt action in 8.6 blackout. So that seems to be kind of the new hot subsonic round.
Yeah, that's what everyone's getting into now.
Yep. So we've basically just waiting on a few more things as far as like the action, if I remember correctly. And then I'm going to start working on some development for a suppressor and that. So that's that. And then a really cool product that we have is our Integro suppress rifle.
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah.
So this is what I've been looking at for like ever since you guys came out with it. So I'm very interested in it.
Yeah. So we basically took the idea of a couple different things. So traditionally our 30 cal suppressor under the Creative Arms name was a monocore suppressor. And the reason we did that was specifically for our Integro suppress rifle. So what's cool about it is we offer it in 5.56 or 300 blackout. The 5.56 is a 12.5 inch barrel, and the 300 blackout is a 10.3, if I remember correctly. Okay. But so we've actually pin and weld the tube, but the core is actually removable. So what makes it really handy for us is the core is actually the serialized piece, not necessarily the tube.
Gotcha.
So what that allows us to do, and for dealers, is to basically sell the rifle on its own, and then do the tax stamp on the suppressor. So for a dealer, it's really nice because they don't have to wait for the tax stamp and hold the gun. They just have to hold the suppressor core because that's the NFA piece. And then once you get approved, you come in, do your 4473 transfer.
Yep.
And then the core just threads right into the gun. So
okay.
It's this kind of really user-friendly way to be able to have an integrally suppressed rifle. And then if you want to put it on another firearm, you just simply take the core out and we can supply another tube and you just thread that right on and then throw it onto your gun, you're good to go.
Oh, sweet. Okay, yeah. So it kind of makes it a little bit more flexible when you do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So are there any plans for you guys in down the road to get into other calibers with the ISR, or is 5.56 and 300 Blackout kind of just going to be your main focus for right now?
Right now, I would say those two are really our main focus. I think that we want to, as we're doing more suppressor development, do more of a no hold bar, like quiet as possible integrally suppressed rifle. So the monocore design and like suppressor designs, I don't know if you've ever really talked about it with anyone, but there's a variety of different suppressor designs out there. And depending on what you're doing, kind of has different pros and cons. So the monocore is really good for kind of heavy use, especially because you can pull it out. It's all titanium. And let's say you shoot 10,000 rounds or like you're a training center or something like that.
Yeah.
You can just pull the core out. And then if it's really carboned up, you can just sandblast it and then reinstall it. So it makes that type of heavy use application really, how do I want to say that? Like it makes heavy use
more convenient.
Yeah, absolutely. Comparatively to some of these sealed or welded suppressor designs. But along with the monocore being very user serviceable, you're not necessarily going to get the quietest report, if that makes sense, but just because of the right volume inside. So what I'm excited for is as we're developing our new 30 cal stuff to be able to potentially go back and make something that's a lot more quiet and not necessarily user serviceable, but to just make something that is in a, when you go to the range, you're just like, holy shit, that is quiet.
Yeah. Just dead quiet.
Yeah.
Like almost, there's been a few guns or gun suppressor combos I've shot before where I've like shot it and been like, this is like a Hollywood quiet gun. Like it's,
oh yeah,
it's as quiet as it in the movies. Cause like, I mean, anyone who's shot with a suppressor, like you take your friends out there and you throw them shoot like, you know, an AR-15 with a suppressor on it. It's like, oh crap, it's kind of loud still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my first experience with one of those types of reactions with like a legitimate MP5 SD, and I was shooting Sonic ammo, and the first time I shot it, I just looked at it at my buddy and I'm just like, whoa, this is pretty fun, you know. And there's not a lot of firearms and stuff out there that like get you going like that, you know. So it'd be fun to be able to build kind of this iconic type of, like for me as a business owner and everything like that, like to have something iconic like that where you're just like, that's that gun, you know.
Yeah, that's that gun. No, mm-hmm. That's really cool. I just honestly, that's, you know, part of the reason like I do anything these days when I'm talking about firearms builds. It's like I'm doing it because, you know, I'm copying someone else mm-hmm. or something I saw in a movie, or, you know, mm-hmm. just I want to rebuild that thing. So mm-hmm. I definitely get it. Well, that's really cool. So how are you feeling right now about the direction that things are going for companies that do what you do in the suppressor business?
I think it's a very exciting time. And the reason I say that is there is more and more qualitative and quantitative data out there.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily an engineer. I mean, my background's more in marketing and design stuff, but being in this industry and everything like that over the years, I've seen a lot of marketing fluff rather than legitimate data. And so now with the introduction of more people having different types of meters, or I don't know if you've seen Jay over at Pew Science, I mean, being able to have data that's consistent and scientific and matter, now we're starting to see companies really dial in their engineering and put that engineering to the test. So it's really exciting to see this development now of a new wave of products coming out. I mean, like some of the stuff from HuxWorks is really, really cool.
So for those who don't know, HuxWorks was formerly OSS.
Yeah. So like some of the 3D print technology that they're utilizing is really cool. And I think as more and more technology is available to these companies, you're just going to see more innovation. So for those specific companies in the suppressor industry, I think it's the older mentality is kind of in a position where they need to really innovate their stuff to bring it to the next level. And with that, they have the budget already. So you should see probably some really, really cool designs coming out in the next year, I bet.
Yeah, I'm hoping so, because there's been a lot of cool, you know, releases in the last couple of years. Like, I mean, a lot of hybrid suppressors, modular suppressors, things I never would have thought like would, you know, we'd be capable of doing, but now it's like, you know.
I'm still kind of on the edge. I mean, on the whole modular thing, I get some of it, but at the same time, for me, like, I try to think about how a user is actually going to use our products. And sometimes the less someone has the ability to tinker with stuff, the better.
they'll reassemble it the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be surprised. And I'm probably not the first one to say this, but people do a lot of dumb stuff with guns.
Oh, I would never do anything dumb with
guns. I mean, I've done some dumb stuff too. I mean, but like from a usability point of view, having like all its modularity is just, it gets a little much, to just say, hey, here's the consumer. You can thread on 8 different baffles. It's like, how should you really allow someone to start threading and unthreading this stuff over and over again?
It does introduce a lot of variables. And I see how that could get complicated, especially with an uninitiated person.
Right. I mean, from a manufacturing point of view, it's really slick, because you can basically just make internals and exit cap and away you go. So that's on that side of it, as far as manufacturing, like, that's really cool and really innovative. But yeah, it's exciting to see where the market's going, and knowing that it's starting to challenge people to actually think about what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, honestly, that's why I'm glad to see there's more and more companies getting into the ring, as far as suppressors goes, because the competition is producing some pretty impressive stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely looking forward to the 3D printing side of things. I know there was a little bit of controversy like a couple months back with a particular, I'm not going to name names, but a particular 3D printed suppressor, or a proposed one, that a lot of people did not have a good time with, but I think that's kind of an outlier. I think really the focus is on 3D, you know, metallic 3D printed suppressors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as technology continues to increase, I mean, so the firearm stuff is only part of our company. I would say it's really a third of what our company really does. So our main company is named Creative Works, and we're really a embedded electronics and engineering company.
Okay.
So we've been around 3D printers for the last, I don't know, 15 years at least. So just for us in our own internal prototyping stuff, to see that you can buy a $400 filament 3D printer or SLA printer, and it can do just as good as what we had 15 years ago, and it's just off the shelf, is pretty awesome. I mean, and same thing with like the metal 3D printers. That was something unobtainable in 2018, really.
They were extremely expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw what the price tag on some of the 3D printed suppressors out there are, but they're really expensive.
And I know there was a couple back at SHOT Show 2019 or 2020, like, where, you know, I was impressed, but then, you know, you saw the price tag. It's like, man, I can have like so many guns for the same price.
Yeah. I mean, to an extent, I mean, that's a crappy thing. And the suppressor industry, I think, is trying to figure that out, what an acceptable price range is. Cause I mean, there's some that are $14,000 to $2,000, and it's like, okay, but is that what justifies that, you know?
Yeah. I personally think the sweet spot is going to land somewhere around between $600 and $800.
Yeah, absolutely.
What I think a reasonable amount would, because, like, you know, like you said earlier, when you break it down, it's a fairly simple machine. It doesn't.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, people forget that you have to have the machinery, you have to have
the R&D time, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, people got to make, you know, a profit off of this stuff, and they are doing research that I would never be able to do. I mean, everyone knows, like, the old trope, you know, like using a freaking 2-liter bottle with like steel wool in it or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's where we'd be if it wasn't for people, you know, like you yeah. and, you know, like, you know, like, you know, Dead Air, Silencer Co. and all that stuff like that. I mean, like all these companies who are doing, putting in lots of capital and research into trying to make guns quieter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, again, it's pretty cool to see that transition now that more and more technology is becoming available. You're starting to see different minds come up with different stuff. So, but yeah, as far as the market, it's an exciting time. And again, going back to just having real data that's consistent, that's, I think, going to play huge later down the road.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said a little earlier. You had mentioned Pew Research earlier.
Pew Science.
So can you explain for our audience what he does and why it's so important to people within the suppressor industry?
Yeah. So Jay is basically doing third-party consulting and testing for the suppressor market. So he's a professional engineer. So he basically has to hold his standards or the standards that he relies on himself is a lot higher comparatively to, say, just a normal engineer. But besides that, he uses his PewSoft. So basically he developed his own software to be able to analyze the suppressor data. So right now he's kind of the go-to person when it comes to rankings and where does the suppressor lie. So it's just cool to be able to have one person that can be consistent and give data that is accurate and is able to analyze that data to the nth degree. I mean, you're being able to see sound data in like 0.2 milliseconds and being able to analyze that. That's really freaking cool.
So, yeah, and obviously that's there to help, you know, with suppressor design and improving, yeah. you know, your, you know, part of the, it's part of what I mentioned before, the research and development process.
Yeah. So he does that third party testing for companies. So basically you have a contractual agreement with him. You're going to send your, let's just say we wanted to have him test a 30 cal suppressor for us. So, we would send that off. He would test it for us. He would give us the data back and then it's our data. So whether he posts it or not, that's up to us. So we can use that data to then be able to analyze what we're actually designing and go forward and innovate stuff. So it's a really handy tool. And then as far as like in the market, it's really nice for the general consumer to be able to look at that data and be able to make their own decisions on what they want. Because
right. Because he's kind of like built up this reputation as being like the standard.
Hell yeah. For
how you're measuring sound and stuff. Cause like, I know like the, like, you know, in the olden days, I guess, like, you know, it was like, everyone was like, well, it's going to be measured 1 meter from the end of the cap and muzzle cap or something yeah. like that. Or it's supposed to be behind the gun or something, like, you know, there's never anything consistent.
Yeah. And I think, and he does a good job of being able to explain that data in a way that, and break it down for people to be able to understand.
Yeah.
I think that that's one thing that's really difficult for the consumer in general to really understand, because like, if you're not used to sound, if I tell you that a 22 suppressor is 110 dB, you have no idea. I mean, yeah. I could tell you that like a soft clap is probably going to be 110 dB and you'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But really it's about impulse of sound. So it's really pressure. So you're not, you're getting the pressure of the report, but you're not really getting the tone or the timbre of the sound. And you're not really getting to see or talk about the back pressure that it might introduce into the gun. So that's one thing that Jay does talk about is the back pressure. And I'm not sure exactly how he lays that out as far as how he tests that. Mm-hmm. But he does talk about the introduction of back pressure into the firearms and stuff like that. So that's something that you have to take into consideration when you're looking at suppressors, is it might be really, really quiet, but you might have to look at adding like an adjustable gas block or something like that.
Yeah, because it's not going to create enough back pressure to operate right. the gun.
Okay. Right, or it might be so gassy that you can't really operate the gun. So like I'm left-handed, and I've shot a couple like M16s and stuff like that where I'm just like, this sucks. I mean, I like shooting, and like getting that much gas in the face is just unfathomably not fun. So it's just learning and then and being able to understand what to do in order to minimize that or change the dynamics of the gun to be able to then operate in a way that you can actually have fun.
Interesting. That's really fascinating that he does that. Obviously, we'll leave a link to his site down in the show notes because he does some really cool stuff. If you're a nerd and you like to read stuff like that, that's the place to go.
Yeah, and his Instagram's pretty funny too. So, I mean, yeah. You post some hilarious stuff if you're on Instagram. So
cool. Well, Preston, I appreciate your time, man. Before we go, your favorite suppressor from Quiet Boar, Creative Arms, and your favorite suppressor not from there.
Ooh. I would say my favorite right now is probably our 30 cal quiet bore suppressor.
All right.
It is really quiet on 300 blackout for being the size that it is as far as diameter. I would say it puts holds its own against other Form 4 suppressors. So next week I'm going to be releasing some data that we got last week kind of showing that. And then as far as like overall my favorite right now, I don't know. I mean, I think that the engineering of the new Huxwerk suppressor is really cool. And just how that's designed and utilizing technology. I don't know if it's necessarily the most, the best design out there, just because of the user serviceability and not really being able to clean out some of those bores, but either them or CGS has some really cool 30 cal suppressors as well. So yeah, either them. And I think it really comes down to engineering. Like the more and more that I've gotten into suppressors, I think I've turned more into an engineering nerd in the last year.
Yeah, so. It's like, oh, now you're looking at stuff that you know you wouldn't even think about like 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And it once you become that kind of data-driven machine, and you start to understand and put it all together, it just is like,
changes the game for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Cause you're just like, okay, but if you change this design or these cone structures and did this, I mean,
yeah, you're chasing numbers and angles at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's cool. Cause like, being able to one, see the data on the backside and then being able to see the instant change in prototyping, like, My favorite thing about our company is being able to take like the napkin sketch idea and bringing it to a full product. Like that process is so fun because we get to try all these different things or work with customers and stuff like that, where you kind of get to spitball ideas and try stuff out and then really dial it into something that's like really dialed in. So
yeah, because you guys are a fairly small company, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, we've been around since 2013 as far as the firearm stuff. Our electronics side, we've been in the industry for probably since 2001. We do a lot of automotive stuff. I know that I talked to you about some car stuff the other day, but we do a lot of race stuff and a lot of stuff behind the scenes on some really cool projects. So it's not something that we really publish all the time, but we get to do some really cool stuff.
Okay. So that's like with racing vehicles and all that?
Yeah. I mean, so like Creative Works, it's mainly circuit board design and manufacturing. And we do that mainly contract out to other companies, or basically when a company has something mechanical that they want to be controlled electronically, we're really good about being able to do that. So with that, we also, like, I've always been around cars. Like both my dad and I race a couple different vehicles. So last year I raced a C10 pickup truck that made like 700 horse, and then this year I'm racing a Fox Body Mustang that can make easily 1200 horse.
That's the blue one on your Instagram page, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah, it's been
good looking car.
Yeah, it was a lot of engineering. I mean, we took it, for those that don't know, it's a 1988 Fox Body Mustang with the new 7.3 Godzilla motor in it. So we're doing some development work with a company called Indy Power Products to basically make aftermarket products for the 7.3. So that motor itself is developed for the F-150 and 250s. So it's a really cool motor because it's new pushrod motor. So it's really the competition for the Chevy LS.
Oh, okay.
But one of the things that's kind of a pain in the ass with it is the oiling system isn't really designed to be in the aftermarket application. So we designed a whole new oiling system to basically shore up the oil pan. So the oil pan sits probably, I'm going to guess, like 7 inches off the bottom of the motor. So if you're trying to put it in like a Cobra kit car or...
Yeah, it's going to be too tall.
Exactly. So we shored everything up. So now it's like 3.5 inches shorter. So it makes that application to be able to put it in an aftermarket car or a motor swap really easy. But that car we're kind of using as a test mule. So like it has probably got the most sensors on it than any other car that I've driven.
It's hooked up to a lot of computers.
Yeah. I mean, not necessarily a lot of computers, but like, so we're using an Mtron ECU, which is based out of Australia. So it's basically, I would say it's a competitor to Motec as far as ECUs. So it allows us to be able to look at a lot of different data. And then as a driver's point of view, we can, or I can utilize that data to go back and like on a racetrack, be able to analyze corner by corner or figure out what the car is doing. I mean, if we really wanted to, we could put like tire temperature sensors and stuff like that and almost be at the same level as far as just data as like a B-class Formula One car, you know, or Formula Two car. So, so it's just that kind of mentality of being data driven and then bringing that into the other side has been pretty fun. But yeah, that engineering group, is really talented, just between both our machine shop side and then our electronic side. Our company probably, I think right now we have 14 or 15 employees full time. On both sides. So that's kind of split up between the firearms and then the firearms and engineering stuff as far as machine shop, because we machine a lot of products for other companies, and then the electronic stuff. So
okay. Yeah, basically, jacks of all trades, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's always a fun, fun time trying to explain to people what exactly we do, because there's just so much that on any given day we get to play with different things. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that helps out, you know. I mean, you can cross-reference, you know, different fields to kind of
and especially with like testing and stuff like that, because for the electronics, I mean, we've done some stuff for the military and that type of thing. So with that, you have to test to a certain level, and getting those contacts to be able to test stuff or be able to make sure stuff's weatherproofed, or just in general, the engineering process that you need to go through has really put a standard to what we're doing. So yeah, it's a good time. I mean, it's a little chaotic at times because we have so much stuff going on and there's only 15 of us, but at the same time, I don't think any of us would regret the time that we're working there.
Well, I mean, we're excited to see what you guys come up with. I mean, I know I am. I mean, I've been following you guys for a couple of years now, and I'm happy with what I have so far. So yeah. I'm always looking forward to the future.
Yep, always.
Yeah, Preston, if people want to find you online, where can they find you on social media?
As far as our company, Creative Arms LLC on both Instagram and Facebook. And then our website is creativearms.com. And then me personally is CA_Preston. So if you look for me, I've got a helmet on and a bunch of car photos. So
good stuff, man. Yeah. All right. Well, Preston, once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on the show and explaining to us what you do and what you're getting into. And for the rest of you out there listening, thank you for stopping in to check out another episode of the TFB B-Side Podcast. And we will catch you next time.
TFB's Behind the Gun Podcast is sponsored by Arms Corps. As the world's largest manufacturer of 1911s, Arms Corps and Rock Island Armory know a thing or two about firearms and ammunition. Affordable, reliable, dependable. Get yours. Visit armscore.com. We're also brought to you by Silencer Shop. How do you buy a silencer? That's easy. just go to silencershop.com. With hundreds of kiosks at select dealers across the nation, Silencer Shop streamlines your silencer purchasing experience. You shop and let Silencer Shop handle the rest. Visit silencershop.com to get started today.
TFB's Behind the Gun podcast is sponsored by Kimber. Kimber Rapide 1911s, three highly customized handguns, the Rapide Dawn, and the Rapide Scorpius, each with a personality all its own and performance to match. Find yours at KimberAmerica.com.